produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis. Hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. Today is when we focus on legal and legislative issues here on the program. After breaking news, we'll hear audio from the June 8th New Jersey legislature hearings discussing the medical use of marijuana. Dr. John P. Morgan is on Normal's advisory board, and we'll hear his testimony today. Our interview today features Karen Mallover, Normal's outreach coordinator, with a big way we can all help Normal without spending a dime. Music on the program features Sublime from the Hempilation album. Normal's Audio Stash kicks back with some great tunes every day. We'll also hear our Normal News special this week, Voices of Reform, featuring Chris Conrad of the Oaksterdam News. Our winner in Tuesday's free stuff giveaway is announced, along with our second web poll of the week, and we'll wrap things up with some pod-safe music. All here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today from Florida. Florida judge orders properties seized. A circuit judge ruled this Monday that forfeiture cases can proceed against six Port St. Lucie homes police claim were converted into marijuana grow operations. A city attorney promised she'll return with more cases, but declined to say how many of the estimated three dozen homes the city will try to acquire. Circuit Judge Ben Bryan granted police immediate custody of most of the houses. He said suspects can work out a deal to continue living in the homes until the forfeiture cases are resolved. Florida Power and Light Company cut off electricity to many of the homes, rendering them uninhabitable. Some property owners have hired attorneys to fight the seizures. An attorney for one homeowner said he would like to remain in his house, but cannot afford to repair the electrical system. Only one property owner has obtained a homestead exemption on his house, and an assistant city attorney for Port St. Lucie conceded she will have to drop the forfeiture claim against his home if the exemption is declared valid. Previous court cases have protected property owners from seizure if their homes have a valid homestead exemption, Assistant City Attorney Gabrielle Taylor said. This is the result of several raids made this spring in Florida targeting marijuana grow operations. More information is available at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. We've assembled another spectacular audio magazine for you today. Take a moment to join us at Normal. Visit norml.org. Let's get to our first segment today, a New Jersey medical marijuana hearing special. We'll hear from Dr. John P. Morgan in his testimony before the New Jersey State Legislature on Senate Bill 88. The participants were via invitation only, and the state senators also heard from television's Montel Williams and a representative from the White House ONDCP. Here's Dr. John P. Morgan.
My name is Dr. John Morgan. I'm a professor of pharmacology at the City University of New York Medical School. I trained in internal medicine, but have spent most of my career teaching medical students the good and bad things about drugs, and I've for a long time been interested in medical marijuana. Preparations of the plant, cannabis sativa, have been used by humans for recreational and medicinal purposes for thousands of years in this culture. Some parts of the plant can generate chemicals, which have come to be called cannabinoids, which bind to prepared substrates and receptors in the brain and provoke changes in the brain by binding to those receptors. It's important to realize that such chemicals must find a prepared place for them to bind. So one might ask, what is exactly going on in the mammalian brain? It is that we have a cannabinoid system, a series of cells and receptors, when activated by this particular chemical in the cannabis plant, alters response to pain, alters response to nausea, lowers muscle tone, may do a lot of things. Now, the cannabinoid system that we have does those things as well, whether you smoke marijuana or not. And in fact, we make a chemical in our brain which binds to the cannabinoid receptor. That's the way it's been. I mean, we didn't develop the system so we could smoke marijuana. We had this system which was efficacious and therapeutic in existence. And it turns out, just like in the case of the opiates, that we found a plant. We stumbled onto a plant that had effects, which some people find positive and some people unquestionably find medicinal. Now, the important cannabinoid, and I apologize for the use of technical language, but without some understanding of technical issues, one can't deal with this. So the most important chemical in the marijuana plant and the cannabis sativa plant is delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol. When people do medical research or toxicology research, they may use pure delta-9 THC. They may use mixtures of delta-9 THC and other cannabinoids, and they may use synthetic preparations which are designed to bind to the receptors in this system. For example, 2 weeks ago, the Food and Drug Administration admitted to the market a product called Nabilone, which was first synthesized by Eli Lilly scientists in the 1970s and was marketed in the United States briefly in the 1980s. Nabilone, like delta-9 THC, binds to the cannabinoid receptor, and it's clearly an efficacious drug for nausea and vomiting, and it has some analgesic effects too. So it's been reintroduced to the market in the United States and will be available. Now, in 1976, a young man named Robert Randall, who was a glaucoma patient, sued the federal government in federal court, saying that it should be his right to use marijuana, which he and his ophthalmologist had found was efficacious in treatment of his glaucoma. Now, to everyone's surprise, I think, Randall won that case. And in 1976, a federal judge, listening to Randall and his ophthalmologist, said, not only does Randall have the right to use marijuana, but you, the federal government, have to supply it to him. It comes as a surprise to many people that since 1978, there has been a federal program to supply marijuana to only a few patients. Initially, the paperwork and administrative burdens and the physicians were so difficult that relatively few people applied for the program, even though the United States government set aside a plot of land where there's the University of Mississippi College of Pharmacy, where there are very skilled botanists and marijuana growers who grow marijuana for these patients and for medical research. The program, as I said, was always difficult for people to get into, and in 1990, the program was closed to further applicants, and there have been no new patients in the program since 1990. The reason for this closure was quite clear to everyone. It's because the program began to receive multiple applications from people with AIDS who wanted to use the drug, particularly for its appetite-enhancing effect and for its ability to treat nausea and vomiting. And in fact, it's the pressure from AIDS patients who, in part, have brought this issue to the fore. The political action of the AIDS community has brought this issue to the fore. And in fact, they and other people are important in the 11 states you've heard to referred to you, which have passed some kind of enabling legislation to permit individuals to use medical marijuana with some protection from the law, particularly the federal law. I have no scientific doubt that smoked crude marijuana is effective in many symptoms and diseases. In fact, smoked crude marijuana delivers THC more efficiently and in higher concentrations than swallowing pure marijuana pills. As many of you know, there is this drug product called dronabinol, trade name Marinol, which contains relatively large doses of delta-9 THC dissolved in sesame oil and encapsulated in three different concentrations, three different amounts. Now, I am a supporter of the availability of Marinol, but in simple truth, it does not work as well for many patients as does smoked marijuana. And I also state something on a favorite topic of mine. World studies have indicated that when large amounts of cannabis product are ingested by mouth, that there is an occasional emergence of something called the cannabinoid psychosis. That is, people become floridly psychotic with large doses of oral cannabis. Now, it may be because of a particular metabolite generated by the liver, may have to do with accumulation of the product. I have only seen cannabis psychosis in the United States in Marinol users. I've never seen it, nor have am I aware of any reports of cannabinoid psychosis in marijuana smokers. It does occur in users of Marinol. Now, strong evidence signals the efficiency of smoked marijuana in pain and nausea and vomiting. It lowers intraocular pressure. It can be used to treat glaucoma. It stimulates appetite, may diminish muscle spasm and pain in multiple sclerosis and following spinal cord injury. Opponents of medical marijuana rarely argue about the issues of the therapeutic effects of cannabis. They are opposed because they fear the wider spread use of cannabis and particularly the facilitation of introduction to young people. I just state to you that I don't think that's the issue that truly matters. The issue that truly matters is the scientific evaluation of this product. In the state of California, which has had enabling legislation for the longest period of time, prevalence of use in adolescents 12 to 18 has actually declined in the last few years. I do want to say something about the issues of toxicity. How dangerous is marijuana? It's very hard for most of us to get a handle on it because every claim that has ever been made lives on. I co-authored a book with my friend Professor Lynn Zimmer called Marijuana Myths, Marijuana Facts, a review of the scientific evidence. And what we discovered was that anything anybody had ever said bad about marijuana was still being said by opponents of marijuana reform or proponents of medicinal marijuana. Let me just briefly say to you, there is no acceptable evidence that in actual use, marijuana has any effect on the immune system, nor does it interfere with pregnancy or spermatogenesis, and it does not harm the fetus. Case-control studies indicate that neither lung cancer nor emphysema is caused by marijuana inhalation at these doses. I guess I'll say quickly one more thing. We are told over again about the new highly potent marijuana, which is so dangerous that we cannot possibly allow people to use it. It should interest you to know that there has never been a systemic study of the potency of street marijuana. That is, sampling from a community, getting random samples, seeing what the potency of marijuana is, particularly over the years, to see if it actually has gone up. The reason such studies have not been done probably is because it costs about $150 to analyze the cannabinoid content of one specimen in a laboratory that can do it. So the claims of remarkably more potent marijuana, I think, are not justified. There is a large survey of the potency of marijuana, its content of THC, which has been performed on criminally seized preparations. That is, preparations that the police seize in large amounts either at the border or in fields or in other places. And it indicates that in the past 20 years there's been a slight increase in marijuana potency, say from 2.5% to 4.5%. I know of no studies to indicate that an increase in potency of that sort is associated with harm. In fact, if you give an individual who's used to smoking 1% marijuana, 5% marijuana, what he does without knowing is to smoke less and inhale less deeply. I think that official medications will come. I think exploration of the cannabinoid system may yield exciting new medications, but I believe at this time and in the future, individual patients should have the right to use medicinal marijuana. And in fact, I believe that the government stance, the federal government stance, which tells us that we may use official medicinal preparations and not use medical marijuana, is like the federal government telling us we can use vitamin C, but we're going to outlaw orange juice. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you.
Links to the New Jersey State Legislature website, where you can listen to the entire hearing, including Montel Williams' passionate testimony, are up at normalaudiostash.com. Next, we'll hear from National Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Karen Mollover, on a big way we can all help Normal without spending a dime. Everyone out there wants to help Normal, wants to help the cause of marijuana law reform. And did you know that there are 10 ways you can do it completely for free? We know not everyone can assist Normal financially, but there are definitely ways you can help reform marijuana laws across this country without having to spend a single nickel. Joining us today is Karen Mollover, Normal's Outreach Coordinator. Welcome back here to the Audio Stash, Karen.
Thank you.
Now tell us about the number one way we all can help Normal without having to do it financially.
Absolutely. The most important thing that cannabis consumers can do at this point is register to vote. With the upcoming midterm elections, it's absolutely time that we start electing into office officials who support our issues. That's really the only way we're going to get anything done. And there's lots and lots of tools that activists have at their disposal. But if you want to talk about really making policy change and really changing the law, we need to lobby our congressmen at the state and the federal level. And one of the best ways that we can outside of lobbying is simply voting. If we have an official in office already that supports our issues, it just makes the lobbying that much easier. And since November 2006 is when the election is, so now is the best time to not only register to vote, but to get as many friends and family members as you know who are cannabis consumers to also register to vote.
Now, once you're registered to vote, how do you find candidates who are pot-friendly? Sometimes they might not announce this directly.
Well, in states that are decriminalized or have medical marijuana, you can generally find the voting records on your congressman in those issues. But to help you along, Normal has put together all of the congressmen in the House of Representatives and given them a rating system. You can find this at votesmart.org, or you can go to normal.org through the Take Action section. And then in the coming weeks and in the month ahead, we're going to be adding to that state officials as well as senators running. So it's easy enough to just take a look at this website, scroll down the page, find your congressman, give it a click, and see where he rates on our negative 10 to positive 20 scale.
And Karen, what are the other ways during an election that we can help push the issue of marijuana law reform?
Make it a public discussion. It's absolutely time we get mainstream America included in this and create a national discourse on this issue. So go to those public meetings, go to those forums and debates, and force the people who are up there speaking to you or trying to get your vote to take a stand on this issue. And the more friends and family members that you can bring to these forums, the larger of a constituency that you can show, the more likely you are to get these congressmen or these politicians or whomever on your side.
Folks, we aren't asking you for your money, but we are asking for you to vote. Fulfill your civic duty and create change in America. Thanks, Karen, for helping all of us who are on the tightest of budgets out here get involved.
Get out the vote. You're very welcome.
Don't have to be a millionaire out there, folks. Heck, you don't even need some spare change to make a big difference in America. Get out there and get involved, folks. Next up today, it's some kickin' stash music with Sublime from the Hempilation album. No other podcast can offer this type of headline music talent. And as I said, we are proud to offer it to you, our loyal listeners. Here's Sublime with Legalize It. We'll be right back. That's Sublime from the Hempilation album up here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Next, we'll listen in on the Normal News special, Voices of Reform. This special features clips of some incredible social justice audio gathered at the 2006 Normal Conference in San Francisco. We have a dedicated podcast for the Normal Events audio, and we've got an iTunes link right up at normalaudiostash.com. Voices of Reform, a Normal News special from the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Each week we'll be presenting special podcasts with portions of audio recorded at the 2006 Normal Conference in San Francisco. The complete speeches and more Normal audio is available at norml.org/podcast. We'll hear from Chris Conrad, activist, author, and publisher of the Oaksterdam News. Chris has written on the issues of medical access and industrial hemp, aiding the media and mobilizing change in California.
The thing is, what are you trying to do? And the first list I have here is crutch, coax, or convince. Now, when you're debating someone, theoretically you want to win the debate, but you don't want to win the debate in such a way that you create sympathy for your opponent. So you have to, oftentimes you want to crush your opponent, but if you're talking to someone on a one-on-one, you don't want to crush that person at all. You want them to end up being convinced that you're right and coax them into taking your position. So you have to use a very different approach depending upon which of these you're going to go for. What I strive to do is to educate, to motivate, and to direct people, give them some new information, give them an energy to go out and do something and send them where I want them to go. The last thing is repeat, 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 weapons of mass destruction, weapons of mass destruction, weapons weapons of mass destruction. It doesn't have to be true if you say it often enough. Or at least that's what some people think. The next thing is to know your audience. And I think what we just heard a little while ago from Marcia is really telling. You know, this is your audience today. If someone takes a videotape of this and gives it to somebody else, what are they going to see? How's that audience going to react? You can't really be circuited enough in your thinking to know every possibility. And there's going to be some people who you're not going to convince no matter what anyway. But you should be aware of at least who you're trying to reach and how it might be interpreted by someone who is not there. And you try to look for something that links people together. For example, who thinks marijuana should be legalized? See, we've got a common bond. Ain't that great? There are some other questions I could have asked, but I decided to stay away from that because someone may see this video in the future. Okay, so the thing is that people are motivated by a lot of things, but the real motive is their personal interest, what it is that makes this interesting to them, what it is that how it affects them directly and so forth. So when you're talking to a group, you're looking for that. If it's farmers, you talk about how hemp will save the economy. If it's parents, you're going to talk about how we can keep kids from getting involved with hard drugs. If you're talking to a government, you're probably going to talk about how expensive this drug war is as a failure and how we can bring in new generated revenues by changing these laws. But the other thing is, what are they ready to hear? Because I've been in a situation where I've said something to somebody and had them say to me, well, I don't agree with that. And so I say, well, what do you think? And then they repeat basically what I said back to them because they didn't want to hear quite what I was saying. And actually, Marcia was in on that one of those situations, too, where we gave the whole talk about how, you know, we're not talking for full legalization. And at the end, these people came and said, well, now I understand. You know, it's not like the right winger is saying about prohibition. It's not like you guys are saying about full legalization. The answer is somewhere in the middle, which is what we had said. So then the other thing is the words and the symbols. Which, of course, these are very important things because not all audiences react the same, and certain symbols have certain power that can be for or against you, and if you're in the wrong group and you use it the wrong way, it's not going to happen. And, like, for example, I start off with, like, a very powerful symbol here, the American flag. Now, when I see the American flag, and when many people see the American flag, if you look at Fox TV, you see the American flag that's obviously designed to trigger a certain response in you. Now, that response can be different things. Salute the flag. Some people, like if you're Native American, you may not feel the same way about this flag. Or if you're other people in other areas, you may not. But a lot of Americans, they relate very positively to the flag. And so then you have to think about, is there another sublime level to this? Which, of course, it's a flag. But what do I know about this flag? This is basically a George Bush flag. Why do I say that? Made in China. The job was outsourced. Made out of plastic, nylon, from fossil fuels. So when I look at this flag, on the one hand, I see the blue of virtue and the red of the blood that was shed for it and the white of our, you know, righteousness. But on the other hand, I'm seeing exported jobs and fossil fuels. And so is it? What about this then? A hemp flag. It's the same symbol, but yet it carries a lot of other weight with it. This is a flag that's grown from the soil, relatively few pesticides, et cetera, good for the environment, and it carries all those symbolisms. And not only that, but this is the kind of flag that Thomas Jefferson and George Washington fought for the basic freedoms of this country under. This is the kind of flag, not the George Bush flag. This is the George Washington flag, and this is what this country is supposed to be about.
Chris Conrad, activist, author, and publisher of the Oaksterdam News at the 2006 Normal Conference in San Francisco, California. His complete talk during the Reefer Rhetoric and Retorts panel is available on our Normal Events podcast. Visit norml.org/podcast for more info. This has been Voices of Reform, a Normal News special from the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Take a moment to join us at Normal. Visit norml.org. That was our Voices of Reform special with activist and author Chris Conrad. You can link up to the event's podcast and hear the entire speech at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Dr. John P. Morgan, Chris Conrad, and Karen Mallover for contributions to today's show. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the amazing pod-safe music. We featured Carne Cruda in our theme. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. Take a moment to join us at Normal. Visit norml.org or visit the gear and join links right at normalaudiostash.com. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.